You are listening to Unbreakable. This podcast shines the light on family and domestic violence. We discuss the various forms of family and domestic violence, what it looks like, and we talk to the experts and survivors. Unbreakable is sponsored by DV Assist, a free counselling and web chat service for people living in regional, rural, and remote Western Australia. They support anyone experiencing family and domestic violence. Some of the content in this episode may be confronting or distressing. We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians upon the land on which we record this podcast today and extend our respects to those listening on regional, rural and remote Western Australia. Family and domestic violence affects people from all walks of life. We understand men and LGBTIQA+ experience family and domestic violence. However, statistics show women are more overrepresented. For this purpose, in the podcast, we will refer to she when discussing people experiencing violence and he when discussing people who use violence.
We advise names and details of all individuals, events and identifiable characteristics in the following story have been changed to protect their privacy.
This topic talks about sexual violence and may be upsetting and triggering for some listeners. Specialist sexual violence support services include the Sexual Assault Resource Centre and can be contacted on 1800 199 888 and 1800 RESPECT on 1800 737 732.
Hi, we're Lisa and Lindsay, and today we're talking about The Last Taboo, where we discuss sexual violence. Today we'll also share part of Jackie's story, a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and sexual assault. And Jackie has given us permission to read out her story today.
Yeah, we thank Jackie for sharing her story today. And for anyone out there that would like to submit their story, you can do so at community@dvassist.org.au. Before we get into the story, I want to share with you the World Health Organization definition of sexual violence, which defines it as acts that range from verbal harassment to forced penetration and an array of types of coercion from social pressure and intimidation to physical force.
So in layman's terms, sexual assault is where someone forces you to do something you don't want to do in a sexual manner. So it could be a fellatio, it could be anal sex, it could be the use of sex toys, bondage, anything that you don't feel comfortable in doing but you're being made to do or bargained to do. So it involves any forced or unwanted sex, any acts, any touching. And then when we talk about child sexual abuse, we're looking at the power over a child or an adolescent to partake in sexual activity. So these activities may include watching adults have sex. It may be coercing them to participate in sexual acts or have sexual acts performed on them. It may be posing for photos or videos on their phone. It might also be exposing kids to pornographic images, either on their phone or magazines or pornographic movies. It might also be something as innocuous or may appear innocuous as watching a child go to the toilet. So that also can constitute child sexual abuse. When we talk about indecent assault is any touching or threatened touching of someone else's body in a sexual manner without their consent. So any touching that they do not want to happen but is forced upon them.
So Lisa, why is sexual violence the last taboo?
Sexual violence is probably, in my experience, the least disclosed form of violence. It's the one people don't want to talk about. It's the one they're ashamed to talk about. It's essentially a dehumanising and defiled act, and it often leaves people who have experienced it extremely vulnerable. They blame themselves a lot of the time. They have a deep sense of shame, humiliation. For some, it's easier not to think about it but rather and not accept what's happened to them, so they just push it away and live in denial. It's also a crime that attracts the most victim blaming. So in my experience, I've seen so many people who are experiencing this form of trauma and they just can't deal with being blamed for it. So when they've experienced sexual violence or, you know, whether it's, sexual assault or harassment or anything like that, they often experience the most heinous sexual, victim blaming about it. So it could be there about what they're wearing, what they're doing, how much they're drinking, do they walk home alone, Was your skirt too short? So a lot of people don't want to deal with that blaming and being blamed for the violence that they've experienced.
Which is understandable, going through such a traumatic event. You know, for some people that it's their closest person to them, a family member, for example, having to deal with that. And then on top of that, when wanting to seek support, getting that blame, it's overwhelming and upsetting and just not okay that we blame the person who's actually experienced this at all.
And that can be quite difficult when someone's a child as well, like a little kid who's getting blamed for the abuse that they've experienced, and especially ones where, you know, you've got a six-year-old girl who's being told, oh, you dress too provocatively, you're too pretty, and they're blaming a little child who doesn't have the license to make sexual decisions or any of those kind of decisions, and they're being abused by people that are supposed to love them and protect them, and the people who are the closest the most. So that can be quite devastating for some people.
Absolutely. It's never the fault of the person who's had this done to them, never. So now we're going to get into the story which Jackie has submitted, and yeah, let's get on with it now.
Not a problem. So Jackie did submit her story, which was fantastic of her. So thanks so much, Jackie. So today Lindsay's going to read out her story, and I'm just going to give some information along the way in regards to sexual abuse and sexual assault.
Okay, so Jackie was sexually abused as a child by a family member. During this time, she experienced feelings of guilt, anger, shame, self-loathing, and fear. She tried to tell family members, however, they did not believe her. In fact, one even said, "He didn't have sex with you, therefore nothing happened." Jackie was not supported by some of her family. For others, it wasn't that they didn't believe her, but more that they didn't really know what to do. Being abused created issues for Jackie. She started drinking at a young age, she lost her confidence, and whilst her schoolmates were starting to get boyfriends, she stayed away from them. Jackie was intelligent and smart and funny, but she shied away from a lot of social events. She was also a high achiever who dedicated herself to her schoolwork and did well at school.
It's interesting that a lot of these are Jackie's experiences relating from those sexual abuse. Sexual abuse for kids who've experienced it can often have lifelong effects. So they may experience anxiety, depression, under overachieving, like in the case of Jackie. There might be substance abuse, reckless or criminal behaviour, withdrawing from society and many other people. They might also experience shock, denial, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, unpredictable behaviour, lashing out, mood swings, loss of trust towards loved ones or new people, low self-esteem or self-loathing. And these are just some other things that people experience. And child sexual abuse can have a long-lasting impact for many people.
I think you make an important point about that challenging our worldview, that when it is done by, well, anyone that's done that to us, but in particular our family or someone that we trusted, it can really challenge us, yeah, to be able to trust others, to have that sense of safety in the world, and how that can really impact us on a emotional level. Jackie moved out when she was 21 and soon met a guy, John, who was popular with her colleagues and new friends. He was funny and nice and flirty. He soon asked Jackie out. One night, Jackie and John went out to a club with one of his friends and one of her friends. At the club, they were all dancing and having a few drinks. About the third drink in, Jackie started to feel funny. She felt drunk, but not usual drunk, and felt as if she was outside of her body. They all soon left the club and went back to Jackie and her friend's house. Her friend and John's friend hooked up and left Jackie and John alone in the lounge room. They started kissing, and Jackie still felt out of it, as though she was watching herself. She tried to stop John, but she couldn't seem to stop him. He started to have sex with her, and Jackie kept saying no and trying to push him off her. However, John did not stop. He kept going despite it hurting her so much. After he was finished, there was blood everywhere, and John freaked out. Jackie told him to leave and saw all the blood on the couch. She was starting to sober up and felt in pain. She didn't know what to do and didn't think anyone would believe her. She was at a club dancing and drinking and kissing John. Everyone saw them together. She went and ran a hot bath and sat in there for over an hour until the water turned cold, then went to bed. Jackie realised that John had drugged her and had put something in her drink. Normally Jackie would not get that drunk on 3.5 Bacardi breezes. The next day, her friend saw all the blood and asked what happened. Jackie told her friend that she didn't want to see John again. Jackie went to work and worked her shift in pain. As a result from the assault, Jackie bled for 3 days and was in a lot of pain. She was also withdrawn and wanted to hide away in her room. She did tell a few of her friends. They didn't know what to say. Looking back, she wondered why no one suggested making a police report or seek counselling, yet no one did.
So research has shown that survivors of child sexual abuse are more likely to end up in partner intimate violence or be re-victimised. So for many who've experienced sexual assault, they'll often experience sexual abuse sexual assault when they grow up. So for many of those who've experienced sexual assault, they're often reluctant to report it to the police. And in the case of Jackie, she actually didn't, and no one encouraged her to do so. So while they might not believe what has happened to them, they're also concerned that there might not be enough evidence to present to the police as well. And people who have been sexually assaulted often feel that no one will believe them. The cops won't believe them. There's not enough evidence. They're worried about the victim blaming, like we discussed earlier, about being called a slut, a hoe, or a whore. They might just be in total denial about what's happened to them and don't want to acknowledge the fact that they were raped or sexually assaulted. And many don't even want to remember that it happened. So for many people, it can be, if I didn't remember, it didn't happen. Mm. So I don't have to deal with it.
And that can be a coping, way of coping.
For sure. For a lot of people, and if they don't acknowledge it, they don't have to deal. Mm. And that's for some people, that's how they work it. That's how they don't want to cope with it. And that is their way of coping, by not dealing with it. Others may not want to be seen as a victim. They're afraid to be looked at like, I'm a victim, I've suffered something and I'm not a victim, I'm a survivor. So again, everyone takes it differently. Mm-hmm. They might all be afraid of the stigma, because unfortunately some people who do experience sexual assault, they do get labelled as, you know, sluts, whores, hoes, which is completely unacceptable. It is not okay for anybody who has experienced sexual assault. And they might also have the feelings of guilt, of shame, humiliation, or they might fear the person who's hurt them.
Mm. John sent Jackie flowers to apologise, which she thought was a weird thing to do. She could only look back and wonder if he understood what he did. Did he feel guilty? Was he gaslighting her? Did he see this as normal behaviour in a relationship? John also came to visit Jackie when she wasn't well one day. Her friend sent him up to her room where he woke her up to say hello. Jackie was uneasy and freaked out. However, she remained outwardly calm and he left. Jackie cut off all association with John and she didn't see or hear from him again. He called months down the track when Jackie moved to another town. Jackie pretended to be someone else, saying Jackie had left the country and sold her phone. John bought this and never called again. It freaked Jackie out and wondered if he was tracking her down, but she never saw or heard from him again.
For sexual assault survivors, they react and cope in many different ways. So in this case of Jackie, she did freak out a bit. She had a reaction to him, which would be a trauma response. But she hadn't reported it to police. She was dealing more with her trauma responses, like in this case of the anxiety and the freaking out and the panicking. Others might use drug and alcohol to cope or they engage in risky behaviour. So again, when we're looking at people and how they react, they all might react differently in trauma and to manage that trauma. Others might have suicidal ideations or feel suicidal and want to kill themselves, or they might want to harm themselves. For others, they might experience high level of anxiety or depression, live in constant fear, live in fear of their attackers.
Mm.
Some survivors go the other way and they go promiscuous, where they, you know, will often have a lot of sex because it doesn't mean anything to them. It's just an action. And they're like, well, why not? This has happened to me, so I'm just going to go out and do as much as I want. Others might go the opposite and they shy away from any sexual activity or relationships. So they completely withdraw from meeting new people, getting into new relationships, engaging any intimacy, engaging any sexual act that they might, you know, which would normally be consensual. There's also a high prevalence of dissociation. So for some people, when they do get into a relationship or they go to have sex again, they're not present. So their body's there, but they're not there. And I think Jackie actually says it in her story that she's looking at herself, that it's like peering, looking at herself, and that's what dissociation feels like. But it's important to remember it is never, ever the fault of the survivor. It is never their fault, ever.
You're 100% right there. It's never the fault of the survivor. And just hearing that part of Jackie's story would have been so scary, I imagine, waking up to just John being there, particularly what happened earlier. I could only imagine some of the fear that would be going through her, and that would have been very scary. And how Jackie handled that so well, actually, I can really see to protect herself in those moments.
She would have may have been even feeling really heightened about seeing him, that panic, that breathlessness, that heart racing, that feeling like on the verge of a panic attack. You know, some people feel like that, not everyone does, but she may feel really heightened by the fact that he's just suddenly appeared and she's been asleep and quite vulnerable.
Jackie started to drink a lot and party hard. She went clubbing most nights, drinking excessively. She soon started to experiment with drugs. In her social circle, drugs were easily accessible. She also started to use men for sex. If she could use them before they used her, she would. Jackie wasn't looking for love. She was looking to punish men. She was hurting and she hated herself and she did not care. Jackie moved towns and met James. James was a decent guy. He was popular with everyone. Her new friends and family loved him. He was also fighting his own demons, which is why he saw the pain Jackie was in. Jackie and James were friends only at first, but it later developed into something more. James and Jackie understood each other, and James just knew what had happened to Jackie. He was patient with her, good to her, and they fell for each other. But they both had issues to deal with and which affected their relationship, not in violent or abusive ways, but more regarding commitment. But the care and support James gave Jackie allowed her to start healing, and she realised she was in love with James. James gave her the ability to fall in love with someone properly and that she was capable of loving someone else.
So for many survivors of sexual assault, many seek counselling and work through their trauma, which enables them to move forward. And then they can then go on to have stable, respectful, healthy relationships. For others, the trauma will always be there. I often talk to people who have experienced sexual violence as part of their relationship. And we often discuss how there isn't a handbook on how to cope. Like, there is no handbook on how to manage and cope with the trauma of sexual violence or family domestic violence or any kind of trauma. So everyone handles it differently. There's not a set way. There's not a checklist. Wish there was, but there isn't. However, SARC do actually have some great tips in regards to managing the trauma of sexual violence, and they're often ones that I use with people I support. So some of these can include remembering the experience is not your fault. And like we said earlier, it is never the fault of a survivor. This is something that happened to you that you did not want, that you did not ask for, that you did not deserve. It is not your fault. It was the person choosing to do it. People who've been affected by trauma in many different ways, they're normal. The impacts of the trauma is normal. You're not crazy. You're not broken. And I often say you're a normal person who's experienced something abnormal. You don't have to go through this alone. In the case of Jackie, she felt she was alone and didn't have anyone to turn to. And when she did try to turn to them, it didn't quite get the reaction or the response that she wanted, it's just one of those things. It wasn't a reflection on anyone. But there are always people out there that are willing to listen, to support. DV Assist is able to listen and to support. SARC, Lifeline, 1-800-RESPECT. There's always people out there willing to support, willing to provide support, and willing to listen and believe you. And it is also possible to recover from your trauma. We can move forward. We can understand our trauma responses. We can understand what we've experienced. We can move through it. We can learn to feel good, live a happy, normal life, or almost normal life. And this is what you deserve. Anybody that has experienced trauma, particularly the trauma of sexual assault, they deserve to be fulfilled, happy, and live a normal life as much as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jackie says you have a choice what you do with your experiences. You can either let it break and destroy you, or you can use your trauma and experiences for good. In Jackie's case, she sought help, got her alcohol consumption under control, and studied. She is now in a profession which allows her to help others and raise awareness of sexual abuse and assault. Jackie is stable emotionally and psychologically, but there are times when flashbacks occur and she still has anxiety. She has an active social life, a fulfilling career, but she doesn't date as much. She tells people these experiences are not who you are. They are a part of you, but they are not the whole you. You can make it through to the other side, and there are always people out there who will listen and support you.
And I think it's great that Jackie's actually doing that, and she's mentioned that in her story as well. I firmly agree with that. I believe in what she says, that with your traumatic experiences, you can either let it break you and destroy you, or you can move through it and take it further and do something with it. I think Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins are actually prime examples of this. You know, they're two people who spoke out, and I feel that's a good thing. They've raised awareness on sexual abuse and sexual assault in Australia and its prevalence. These are two very different women from two very different backgrounds who both experienced something heinous and traumatic. So for people who have experienced violence, I mean, in particular sexual violence, these two women speaking out actually gave other women who don't have a voice a voice. And that was something that I heard a lot last year from talking to people, is when these two women in particular were speaking out about what had happened to them, that they were looking at their relationships going, this is me. This is me. This is not normal. What I'm experiencing is not normal. He's just forced himself on me. He's just asked me to perform oral sex on him. He's saying, if my kids want to be safe, you'll have sex with me. If he wanted to participate in bondage or any other sexual act they weren't comfortable with, they were forced into it and realizing, hang on, this isn't normal. Hearing things like, well, you're my wife, you have to have sex with me. That's not normal and that's not okay. And a lot of women were starting to realize at that time that they were being told this by their husbands and boyfriends, that it's all part of a relationship, it's part of marriage, and it isn't. It's actually against the law. So it's not okay. And
that it's choice. It's what we're comfortable with always. We're allowed to say no, and that is never our fault in that. And we shouldn't be made to feel guilty or coerced into doing anything otherwise.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I do agree with that, both as a woman, as a person. Anybody, male, women, transgender, non-binary, whatever the case is, should not be forced or coerced into any sexual act that they don't feel comfortable with. And I think that was really important with Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins, is they really shone the light on the prevalence of sexual violence in this country.
They did.
And the attitudes towards sexual violence, where they owned their experiences by saying, this is what's happened to us, we've experienced this. This shouldn't be allowed to happen anymore, and we're going to raise awareness and fight as hard as we can. And I feel that was really important for anybody who was experiencing coercion or assault in their relationship. I think that was really important a really important message.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with you there, that it, you know, takes it out behind closed doors and puts it out in the open more and says, hey, this is actually not okay. And also empowering and challenging the community as well to say, we need to believe people when they actually say this, and we need to support them, not continue to victimize or blame. And hearing Jackie's story, it just shows the amount of strength here, and also really offers hope that things can get better. That for Jackie, she made a choice: I'm not going to let this break me, I'm going to heal from this and move forward. And that shows such strength and courage and just that empowerment. And I'm really thankful that Jackie shared her story today, because I think it can be really helpful to our listeners, that, you know, you're not alone, that there is a way forward, and that, yeah, services, if required, are there to support you. So just to finish off on Jackie's story, Jackie actually mentions Brittany and Grace Tame, that when she watched them on TV, it made her feel proud. They were not afraid to speak out and share their experiences. She actually mentions that she wished she had the guts these women do, and she wishes that she had the courage to speak out when it happened, but she didn't. If there were women out there like Grace and Brittany at the time, I might have spoken up and it may have been different, but there wasn't, so I said nothing and dealt with it myself the best I could. I feel proud of these two women for standing up and saying something. We need more role models like Brittany and Grace. They weren't just inspiring women to seek help, but also men too. And I want to really highlight here that Jackie did the best that she could. She actually did incredible to survive and move forward and take charge of her life of the way she wanted it to be. And that's the thing that we're saying. We can deal with our trauma in each way that suits us, and it's our choice. And, yeah, really inspirational today.
Yeah, and I agree with that sentiment as well. I often say, not in a professional sense, but more like with my mates, you don't have a choice but to have two choices. You either let it break you and destroy you, or you move forward and use it for good. Mm. I wouldn't use it necessarily in a therapeutic sense, but definitely when I'm talking with my friends and family, I often say that, and especially when, you know, friends have experienced trauma and things that have been really rubbish. But I feel that's true, and we can look at things and we can just keep on letting it destroy you. Letting it destroy you, just ruin your life, or we turn around and go, hey, this is what happened to me. Yes, it was rubbish. Yes, it was awful. I accept that. How can I help others like me? And I think that's a really important message, and that's a really important message I've got from Jackie today, and as well as Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins as well, with sharing their story.
Yeah, it's an individual journey, and that it takes time as well, that there's no rush to the finish line, and having time to process those emotions and those feelings and those experiences, and taking that choice, whatever that looks like for you. So I think that's it for today, isn't it?
It is. It is. And thanks, Jackie, for sharing the story. It was really interesting to hear it, actually, and from someone who has experienced sexual violence, such as Jackie, to actually have the courage to share that story. And I think that story might resonate with a lot of people as well.
Mm. Thanks for listening to us, and we'll see you next time.
Sexual violence is a serious public health and human rights issue, with both short and long-term consequences on a woman's physical, mental, social, sexual, and reproductive health. Whether sexual violence occurs in the context of an intimate partnership, within the larger family or community structures, or during times of conflict, it is a deeply violating and painful experience for the survivor. As we heard from Jackie's story, Jackie experienced significant violation. Her ability to trust and feel safe in the world was severely impacted and manipulated by the criminal acts of others. Furthermore, Jackie's experiences were not taken seriously by those closest to her, contributing to further isolation. Jackie's story highlights her strength and ability to heal herself and take her power back. Talking and speaking out about sexual violence helps reduce the taboo surrounding it. However, Jackie's story highlights the role everyone has in believing supporting those who disclose sexual violence. We thank Jackie for sharing her story. You've been listening to Unbreakable. No matter what, they will not break me.
All people featured on this podcast have been de-identified to protect confidentiality. We acknowledge the duration of our podcasts are short and only provide a snapshot of the complex and sensitive topic being discussed. If this content has been upsetting or distressing, recommended support services include DV Assist on 1800 080 083, 1800 Respect on 1800 737 732, or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Visit our website for a range of information and support at www.dvassist.org.au. If you would like to suggest a topic or share your story, please contact us at community@dvassist.org.au. If you have any feedback about this episode, please email us at community@dbassist.org.au. See you next time.